Hi, I'm Gillian.
I'm Rebecca.
And I'm Mary, and we're Fufu and Tibbs.
Today, we're on our second hike with Arc'teryx, and we have a very special guest, rapper extraordinaire, BY! Yay! So we're in Lane Cove National Park, in the heart of Sydney, and we are going to take a walk and have a chat. So come and join us.
Let's go.
Let's go.
Welcome back to another episode, everyone. We are back with Arc'teryx and a very special guest, B-Wise.
Yes.
We're on our second walk of this partnership with Arc'teryx. And how are you finding it so far, guys?
It's good with me.
Yeah?
It's nice and easy, I'm not gonna lie.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, we just took a little wrong turn.
Yeah, a detour. Yeah, an accidental detour.
Yeah.
You know, more track time.
Yeah. And it's very leafy.
Yeah. There's a lot of canopy here. Yeah. So it's a good hike. And there's a cool breeze.
There's a good breeze. Definitely. I mean, like last time we went with for our first hike, it was quite treacherous. And it was like steeper, but this is more of a leisurely.
Not treacherous.
Yeah, no, it was treacherous days. But yeah, great to have you, B-Wise.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Appreciate it. And even just appreciate what you guys have been doing and what you've been putting together, honestly. So,
nice.
Love to be a part of it.
Thank you.
This is
dope. Love the recognition. So do you want to, like, for those people who haven't, like, you know, best necessarily interacted with what you do, do you want to give a little rundown of who you are and what you are putting up
to? So yeah, with me, for those who don't know, I'm a rapper, a recording artist, songwriter, also host a radio show called By Your Side, and I guess entrepreneur as well, you know. It's a business that I'm running out here, so yeah, we're doing it all, man. Yeah,
typical Nigerian, just everything. Just a little many parts.
I mean, you got it, man. You gotta work. We're trying to build a brand out here, what I'm saying. So, you know, just trying to be multifaceted these days. I feel like that's the role of, like, most artists. I mean, in this day and age as well, it's good to have that element of multifaceted and trying to wear as many hats as you can, as much as you can do it. Yeah.
I love that. And what would you say, like, how long would you say, I mean, obviously you've got a multifaceted career, but I guess as an artist, how long do you think your career has expanded for so far? When did you start?
So, I mean, I picked up the mic, I mean, like, just rapping and stuff like that, maybe like 10, 12 years ago even. Maybe a little longer.
I think a little longer than
that, for sure. But I wouldn't actually say it was a profession or, you know, it was my full-time, and maybe since 2018, that's when it actually became, feasible. But I mean, that's like being an artist and a rapper and like making music, that was the door, the gateway for me to sort of, to do, you know, what I had to do. And it's like, I thank God for rap music. It changed my life. It's enabled me to go travel and do so many different things and work with so many different people, and it's opened so many doors for myself and others around me. So yeah, that's always the main thing for me.
Rapper doing through. And what about, like, can you take us back a little bit? What's a bit about your upbringing? What's your background?
So my upbringing, I was born here in Australia. Grew up primarily in southwest Sydney in Liverpool. My background, you know, between there and then later on now towards that West Campbelltown. And background, cultural heritage, you know, Nigerian Australian, so that's a big part. But I'm here, you know.
And growing up, what was that like being both Nigerian and Aussie? What was your cultural experience like? Were you tilted more on one side, or did your family incorporate the two? How was it like?
Well, to be honest, speaking frankly, like, yeah, I think biologically I'm biracial. But I was raised as a Nigerian, you know. I identify as a black man, you know. My full name is James Ugochukwu Iyakunwa, you know.
Wow. Talk that to me.
I carry that name, and I mean, but, you know, that's the thing as well, is that I was born here as well, you know, and definitely grew up here, but I've traveled back and forth between since a child, always been on both sides. But that's the way me and my sisters were raised. We were raised, you know, with our culture, being aware of our culture, Igbo heritage, and since young. So, I mean, I wouldn't say there's been much difficulties, but I would say, like, as a child, when you were younger, quite like primary school, there was definitely a period, you know, in the fine years of primary, like, you kind of, there's that element of confusion, because we, I didn't always live in Sydney. We spent some time out in the country as well.
Okay.
So growing up in the country, because wherever my parents went for work, my dad was a social worker, mum was a nurse. So, you know, you're kind of going to school with, like, you know, a lot of white kids and things like that. And you automatically, you knew every day that you were different.
Yeah, you were, it was exasperated. It was
from teachers to students, like, they'll let you know that you're different. So that was one thing. It was a bit of a culture shock. But I mean, coming back to Sydney and also going to Nigeria as a youth and being there, because we didn't do the you know, Christmas holidays, like, we were always there every December. So that was one thing. And so being around my grandparents there and my cousins and aunties and uncles, and that kind of just sort of, you know, help me sort of be proud and understand, you know, what that heritage is about. But at the same time, you know, you carry with you your own man, and, you know, to my sisters, they're their own women, and, you know, we aware of everything.
But it definitely solidified your identity. Obviously, 100%. Being able to go back to Nigeria.
That must
so
have been so enriching.
Definitely.
Super enriching. But, like, a lot of people don't get the opportunity, even as, like,
people born. Even as
I've been to Ethiopia three times in my whole life. Yeah. I'm 27, I was born here. So it's a really enriching, and even those three times have been so impactful to me. Talk us. I'm sure some kids would be salty about going back every December. Like, I want to go to Bali, like my friends. I want to go Gold Coast.
You were. Sometimes you'll just be like, why are we here again? Like, where's the presents? You know, where's the Christmas tree? You know, because it's, like, done differently. But you don't realize how hard those tickets were slapping.
For sure.
Now, as an adult, I really respect what my parents did. But, you know, you want to. You think that as young, but you don't understand really what it was doing for you. So, I much appreciate that, for real.
I think that happens to a lot of people, like, that go every year. Because as a kid, you don't appreciate it. And then it's only until you get older, you're just like, my parents actually did well. Like,
this actually means something. The money, the time off.
Like, hey, every year, taking young kids on flights like that, God, they need a Nobel Peace Prize. Like, when you're young,
and the distance, actually, if it was Europe or somewhere, like, 6 hours, you can shove a kid on the plane and be like, but here we're doing
24 hours. Start dragging them across Dubai. Like, seriously. Oh, well, my brother got lost in Bangkok when he was I know. At the airport, I know.
How did they find him?
He was in the bathroom, but, like, it was just, it was
free. I couldn't imagine.
They get away from you, like, it's you're trying to, they don't speak English there, because our transfer was from England, they don't speak English. I was five, like, she was sorting out our passports, and they just get away from you, like, because they're young, and luckily it was sound, but it was in the airport, luckily, but still, it's,
So earlier before, you told us that you moved out to the country for a little bit when you were growing up.
Yeah.
So what was that like, you know, actually moving out to the country, being visibly, black in that space?
I was quite young when we had got there. So I think I was, you know, when I started from about kindy, because we were there from about kindy to about up to year three, year four, I was there. So I didn't really know as much as Sydney as yet. So that was really my earliest memories were there. So, I mean, look, getting there, at first, the things I always remember is because, like, you know, where we live, there's always a lot of space. Like, there's a lot of, you know, acreages and property. And I believe my parents, like, just rented a home that had a property. We didn't manage the property. We just were there. And so being outdoors, and you always, like, you remember it being, like, very quiet, like, from the city life. I was always outdoors, you know what I mean? Never wearing shoes, just playing and that kind of thing. So I think it was just really, it was more like the school, going to school part was just like, you know, a bit what the culture
social
shock, the
aspect.
Social aspect.
Yeah.
Because that was my first elements of social interaction for me and my sisters. And it was like, you know, as I was mentioning before, like, there was, because you're different, you know, and you can't really expect young kids to know any better. So you're just sort of like, you got used to the names you would be called down to, things like that. You were like, you quite got numb to it. And you found yourself, and I think that's even earlier what you mentioned as well about, how did I adjust with the two cultures and that kind of thing? Because you're trying to like find yourself fitting in or doing into, what you can to fit in, you know, and nothing you're doing is really trying. So you just kind of isolate yourself and just do whatever, and you maybe have that one friend, you know, there's just like whatever. But I mean, that's such is life. So I remember, like, though, when I'm getting home, that was my refuge, you know, me and my sisters and just being amongst each other.
Safe and
you know, that kind of thing. And, you know, even though my mum, she was actually a country girl, so she, but she didn't grow up there. She's from Lowestoft and Bingle and near Cootamundra that. So she was used to that, but she actually was the one was like saying to my dad, we need to go back to Sydney. We need to get back because the kids need to be, you know, amongst it. And I remember going to, I remember starting year four. So I was in like actually Chester Hill for maybe like a year. We moved back with my auntie.
Chester Hill.
Exactly. I'm used to like the first day being like, oh, okay, this is going to be, all right, get ready for another.
You're mentally preparing yourself.
Preparing for another, you know, fight or whatever the case may be. And then being the most popular kid on the first day. And that to me was like, I didn't understand that. I was not used to that. Because of just the, like you just said, like the large multicultural mesh. And that's the one thing I love, I think, about being in Sydney and being in Southwest Sydney and growing up here. And that's why a lot of my identity from my music and to, you know, from that point on, that's when I feel like I started the clock. That's when I, that's where I grew up. And from Chester Hill, then we moved into Hoxton Park around Liverpool.
Oh,
and
yeah.
There, and then we were there for the, you know, the entirety of my teens and whatnot. Yeah. And the adulthood, yeah.
Oh, beautiful.
It's so telling in your art and your branding as an artist that growing up there was such a formative thing. Because even I remember when I first heard of you was when you dropped that album, Area Famous. Yeah. I love the name of the video. Just the name was like, because it's like a lot of artists, even when they first started in the UK and even here, when they first start, they don't do it in an organic way. They're just mimicking something they've seen. But you were paying homage to your roots. And I love that.
Yeah.
What would you say is the most influential aspect of growing up in the area to your art?
I mean, so my art and the most influential thing, I think it was the ability, just because it was such a melting pot and there was so much different things going on. Because even like picking up the mic, rapping, I think even if you look at the title, some people actually misunderstood. Some people, it can misunderstood, but some people understand. But what I was saying to my story is actually within my area and being from the area, but knowing that I was known, particularly, you know, with guys that I'd started rapping with, like K1 and everything, we were known and I was known for that.
Yeah.
That was my, like, sort of, you know, if anything, claim to fame in that space. That's what I was sort of saying. But then also capturing stories around me and capturing my own story going, because your first album is your life up until that point. So there is a storyline if you follow through the album from track 1 to 13. Because the concept is there, you know, and there's those years of, you know, the menacing years, you know, not making the best decisions, doing whatever, but then also becoming conscious, growing into adulthood, becoming a man, and realizing, and also, you know, speaking for the stories of those who may not be, who were not able to be part of that, but you know, I know how much they wanted to be a part of it. So doing that and just capturing all of it. And I remember in that time of 2018, you know, like, I mean, there's a lot of people from, you know, from Southwest Sydney, Western Sydney were rapping, but in, I think, in the mainstream Australian rap space at that point, there was no discussion about like the area. The people were starting to focus on Southwest Sydney's artists and what was going on out west.
Yeah,
I think through that gateway, and I have to like really, that has to be known. I think that really wasn't a conversation we knew by living. Everyone knew what's going on out here, but I think the wider Australia didn't really understand that yet.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I think as now you're seeing all these different acts, you're seeing different artists, and you're seeing people really pushing it to the stratosphere, which is amazing.
Yeah. Do you think, because that's 2018 is a while ago, right? And do you think Australia has caught up? Because like recently, Rebecca and I watched the 1-4
Doco.
Yeah. And just looking at everything they've been through and you trying to give them encouragement, I was just like, are we even going to get there?
Yeah.
Well, for sure. Certainly. Like, we already on that track. As you can see, like, I mean, an act like that doing a Netflix documentary.
Yeah.
Just stop.
But then in my mind, it's like, that's Netflix,
yeah.
But that's a
global thing, does that really translate in Australia to something?
Because you feel like outside they're more accepting than more they are inside.
Yeah. I see. I think it's things like that that will add to the reinforcement, because there might be still naysayers and people who might be like, you know, who may not still yet listen to maybe rap music or things per se from their own region. They'll prefer it from somewhere else.
Yeah.
But I think it's slow elements of that reinforcement, like that we're seeing with things like that, that's legitimizes it, and then people have to sort of pay attention. I remember just seeing a bunch of, you know, I got tagged in a few different things for that moment, but I remember just seeing different threads on whatever social media, and then people just like, I had never, like, from you never expect, they're like, I never heard of 1-4, but I'm just like captured by their story. Now I'm going backwards, and then through that they're now going backwards and also looking at all artists like associates, and then looking at, then it, that's what introduces more people to
it's a catalyst.
And then I mean with travel in general, and like being on tours and festivals that also have different international, like you know, like I remember playing like Splendor in the Grass and things like that. You're on like bills with like all these internationals, and so they want to seeing you and seeing what we're doing out here, seeing the culture, and then also crowds that may have been there for that particular artist, they're now like, oh, okay, let's get to this tent and see what's going on here if we like this particular genre. So I mean, it's making its way. The internet has also added to the speed, I think, of which it's growing. But I think the fundamentals come down though to the artists themselves allowing themselves to be able to freely express what they're saying, to, you know, to feel comfortable within their story. Just going back to what you mentioned, like, I don't think things were connecting for me musically until I said, you know what, I can't do what the Australian Aussie rappers are doing. It wasn't work. I was trying to be part of their world, like, I was even forcing the accent a little bit more, to be honest, you know. So, but I think I'm just like,
look, that sometimes
there's no one in this space right now that is, you know, that has my background, my story, and I just have to sort of tie into that. And I felt like that's when it actually started to connect somewhat. And you know, we're seeing it grow. So I mean, from the artist's perspective, as more artists continue to do what they're doing, and keep it saucy and keep it creative, then shit,
we'll get there.
Yeah,
I
love that. Keep it saucy.
Stay saucy, man.
So earlier before you were talking about your creative process and going on retreats and things like that.
Yeah.
And we are outdoors right now. Yeah. So can you tell me a little bit more about that? Like, what is the creative process for you like, and what do you like about being?
Yeah. The thing was with that, with the whole process, right? Because I think I was looking for a bit of different inspiration. Because it was always like, you know, being the first album or whatnot was always, and even prior to that, was always just being in studio. Dark studios, you know, like vampire hours, that kind of thing. And and I feel like, yeah, you do that to a degree and you get your hours in that way. Sleeping on the ground, all that type of shit, you know.
Damn, you guys were in the trenches like that.
We were really in the trenches together, you know, with everyone sort of. And then I just, going into the next project, I felt like each time I wanted a fresh experience, I wanted to do something a bit different.
Yeah.
You know, I looked at different ways, you know, some other artists or things like would do to sort of, you know, to inspire some creativity or whatever. So, I mean, at that point then, I was like, well, let me try something different. You know, got some budget to play with. Let's go to like maybe an Airbnb, you know. One of the first ones I think I booked out was in Katoomba, actually. Very isolated. You know, all there was like a golf course at the back of it. But then, you know, you had all your tracks and places you could walk. So
during that time, you'd go hiking or like you'd go to the tracks?
Well, we were just basically, you'd wake up in the morning, you know, have breakfast, do whatever you want to do. If you want to go for a stroll, whatever, you can go hike, go for a walk, create, you know, into the night. And then sometimes, like, if you get blocked up, you can just go outside and just be outdoors
You know? And just be at one with your thoughts. I'd love that.
I remember even just sitting down out just by, I don't know, it's just like just out near some trees and things like that, and just sort of putting different words and concepts together, walking back to the house, going inside, and then sort of just spitting out these different concepts and phrases and things like that. So at the time though, I wasn't very conscious of being connected with, you know, sort nature, of nature. And you hear more about people talking about grounding now and being outside.
Were you hugging trees
not hugging trees per se, you know what I mean, but I was more so like, just I think post COVID,
yeah,
learning how then, you know, important it was to be in the sun,
yeah,
to sort of, you know, being barefooted in so somewhat, you know, in some grass, and yeah, understanding how the body really craves those kinds of things, yeah, because as a child I did so much of that, and yeah, then, you know, became really like city domesticated and being in dark places, mm, recording all night, so yeah, yeah. But yeah, that was the whole experience.
That's sick. So do you find that the energy that you had, or the creative type of, yeah, the creative,
yeah,
the type of creative that you had when you were outdoors was a bit different to when you were in a cramped up studio? Did you see any kind of like real difference in terms of like the way that you thought, or were you just,
yeah,
yeah?
I felt I had more energy. I think I had more energy.
Interesting.
In regarding to being able, because, you know, we're talking about recording an album within a space of a week, between a week to 2 weeks,
yeah,
where when I was in studios doing the first one, it was more like that was over a year.
Wow.
So, you know, I was doing it bits and parts, and, you know, okay, do as much as you can, get tired, you know, yeah, the lifestyle was definitely a bit different as well, yeah, you know, yeah. So I felt like just being away, being in a home and an outdoors and something that just wasn't
like a deep familiar, dark studio, yeah.
That just gave me more energy to sort of, you know, to do those things. That. And also, I can't take credit as well, having the creatives that were with me, mm, each time I do these things, like I'll have a different group of producers, mm, you know, other collaborators, writers, so we make it a whole thing. It feels like a, you know, a camp, and,
yeah,
you know, my fiance and maybe one of her friends and all that will come up on the weekend and help us with the cooking, because we're still like a bit,
not with, you know, the cooking.
No. And also the inspiration too, and all this other shit. But yeah, that would just kind of,
sure,
just kind of help us, and we would all, yeah, like eat and sit down and eat like a family.
Like a little community, yeah, you know? Like a family.
So we'll sit, eat like a family, and it's a bit of a getaway for everyone,
yeah,
as well from, yeah, the city life, and that's what I think, where the positivity and the energy came from, yeah, you know, so.
It's kind of going offline for a bit, really dialing into yourself, your totally, thoughts, being amongst people with like the like-mindedness. And
totally.
Then, yeah.
And delivering. I had a jacuzzi at some of them too,
okay,
man.
So you were living it up, it wasn't you know.
Just feel like, you know, so it feels a bit holiday-ish as well, yeah, and whatever, yeah, yeah, you know, so just, it changes the environment, and, you know, you can just really deep dive, yeah.
That's pretty sick, mm, nice.
So you mentioned that you go away to write and get inspiration.
Yeah.
What's the transition like when coming back into the city?
So yeah, coming back into the city usually is like, well, now the way we're recording that way, we'd like to piecing things together, because, mm-hmm, while being away, you know, in Airbnbs and, you know, sort of writing on retreats and things like that, that's where you can sort of have the time to think, have the peace to, mm-hmm, you know, be inspired by different things, and once you come back to the city, that's when you start to like piece everything together, because generally speaking I would like put all the music together in that space, and have the direction, come back, and then in the city you're just putting all the final pieces together again, you know,
mm-hmm,
yeah.
Nice. So where does the kind of like your core inspiration come from, because like the going out and away is very different to being in the city. And I imagine that you get inspiration from like different places, but kind of, yeah, where's the root of it?
Yeah, I think for many artists, but I'll say myself particularly, my main inspiration is coming from life. So yeah, it's generally coming from living. You know, I like to be an artist of life, and I quite either I'm documenting, you know, I'm recording, or I'm talking about experiences that I've gone through, things that I want to do, things that inspire me, that I aspire to do. But I like to feel like I'm one of those. I can't really create things out of the blue unless I've either experienced it, or, you know, or I've lived it or gone through it. So yeah, I'm just sort of an artist of life. It's like, we're looking at this tree, you've got a canvas here, I'm talking, but I'm gonna put something, my little spin on it, my little twist on it, you know. And that's why I think also, even during, let's say, you know, the lockdown periods of COVID, mm-hmm, and things like that, I've had it's been a break of releasing music. I've always been creating, but releasing music for about a year and a half.
Oh wow.
Because the last album was spent, I had already had the album done, so I was putting it out during the 2020 pandemic. I was still, yep, releasing music during that period, but then after that I was a bit like exhausted, like what am I talking about now, what am I doing now,
yeah,
because I've spent the last 6 months, you know, if I'm not on the couch, I'm just going and creating content for the album that we already made. So, you know, that's why last year I spent some time, you know, moving to a new place, went overseas, traveled, wrote in different countries, you know, just did a bit of living, gone through different emotions, a bit of growing, and then that's coming back, and then that's what's sort of reflecting itself now into the newer music and things like that.
You mentioned before that you have a radio show on Kader. Did you envision that your career was going to shape up into those different layers? Like, or did you expect to always be a rapper? Like, when I look at people like Joe Budden and Noriega, like, I don't think what their career now, they envision that.
Yeah.
So what did you think?
I mean, I had no, what's the word? I did not vision radio or like broadcasting and that kind of content in my career at the beginning at all.
Yeah.
I did have the, like, regards to, like, say, doing podcasting and things like that. Mm-hmm. And that's how the actually opportunity came about, because I pitched this idea, a similar idea about doing this, like, when podcasts started to take off and things like that. But then it just ended up leading to an opportunity. It's like, hey, instead, would you rather do this radio show?
Oh, that's
and
amazing.
And then it was just sort of like, okay, can I build this show? Can we build it in a way that I would like to do it? Do I have, you know, sort of free reign to do it how I want to do it? And because it's on commercial radio, I mean, like, you think there's a lot of boundaries or confines.
Yeah, but I was like,
if I can use, I guess, the brand that I'm bringing to the table to enable me to build a platform that also can act as a door for other artists in spaces like that, then so be it. But the way I also look at it, I mean, what I mentioned early on before, balance with the, like, with doing music. Music was always the beginning of the stage, and it still always is.
Yep.
And it's opened these new doors where you look at, like, let's say, I'll look at people overseas and just be like, everyone's doing so much more.
Yeah.
Why do we have this mindset in Australia where it's just like we have to do one thing?
One thing, yeah.
It's just like, you know what I mean? And it's just like, it's just boxing. And even to be able to step into that world of, like, oh, interviewing other artists, speaking to artists of, you know, from different countries and whatever the case may be, that was a whole new skill set that you had to push yourself to learn, you know? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that's the whole thing. You look at, like, the Nicki Minaj's, 2 Chainz, Lil Wayne's, all these guys have these deals now with radio stations while they're still releasing music.
Or even, like, 2 Chainz with the Complex, with the richest, most expensive thing,
Action Bronson. That's where I kind of got the inspiration from, to be like, you know what, let me try and do more things to add more to the brand. So that was really the go with that, you know, and I'm thankful for the opportunity and to be able to still be in the space and just add more to the space, or even use anything that I can do to help other artists in the space as well, you know, to take advantage of the platform.
So for those who've never listened to By Your Side, what would your spill on By Your Side be?
Man, our spill, so I do the show with my, shout out to my producer, Tino. He's a great guy, and we have fun with it. We try to make it, the show's basically, it's a space for, like, honesty, you know, transparency, and really zoning in on the culture as well. So not only are we trying to use the platform to display a lot more Australian music from either rap or R&B spaces, soul spaces, but also highlight music from different parts of the world, whether it be from the UK, the US, even France, even Afrobeat. This tree almost threw me out. Amor Piano, we even play Congolese rhythms, it doesn't matter. Like,
love
so
that.
We just try to use it in an unconventional space. It's like, it almost sounds sometimes like pirate radio, but it's on commercial radio.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that's the thing. And, like, and again, giving the show, being able to be a platform for others to use, you know, to focus on their community, to focus on what they're doing, their achievements, and what they're adding to the scene here as well.
Love that.
So just taking a bit of a break here, getting to sit down, chill out with old B-Wise. I was thinking, because we were mentioning before about, like, how you've been doing this for, like, what, excess of 10 years, right? And just, even with us, we've only been doing this pod for just under 4 years.
Yeah.
The way that we struggle to get, like, sponsorships and things like that on board, because I just feel like people here don't understand what we're doing, or they don't see the potential fruitfulness of what we're doing. And, like, even with the 1-4 documentary recently, people, I feel like people will see a creative venture in this country and not clock the potential it has and won't back it. And sometimes even, I mean, in the case of One Fall, they'll stop it. Mm. Have you ever come across like moments of frustration where you're like, you don't get what I'm doing? You know what I mean?
I think as an industry has grown, there may have been a lot of gatekeeping and things like that. And it was hard to break down those doors and those barriers. Whereas now, because of like, you know, the access to technology, you know, the phone right here, you know, you can directly get to people yourself without any gatekeeping, without anything like that. And so with that, I've just seen the changes come because there's more voices now, there's more people and there's more culture and there's more variety to the story. And there's more going on a music, you know, on a music scale as well. People are contributing more art and more of themselves as well.
I feel like what's that's resulted in, I remember in 2019, I was getting the bus home from work, from the station.
Yeah.
And 1-4 had just dropped Spot the Difference.
Yeah.
And I was going through like an area that they're local to and every car was playing it.
Yeah.
And it was like that, like homegrown cultural moment. Like they were celebrating one of their own, making it big. Yeah. It was like a moment. I feel like I hadn't seen that or experienced that before. Like, you know, in the States, when someone from ATL makes it big, all of ATL bumps their track.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
And it felt like that.
Yeah.
I feel like that is where it comes from, that breaking down of barriers of like, and it was really heartwarming to see kids seeing people who look like them from places that they're
That's
from.
Right.
And that was, it was super heartwarming because I'm from Mount Druitt as well.
Yeah.
And I grew up amongst a lot of Polynesians. Mm. And I think it's something we don't talk about enough in this country, like their experience.
Yeah.
Because a lot of young Polynesian boys are criminalized from a young age because they look a certain way, or like they might look bigger or taller. They're adultified. And I feel like it was so nice to see them in a wholesome light, like seeing young Polynesian boys just being happy.
Yeah.
As
they should, you know, they should be proud of that moment. I mean, but it's just familiarity as well. Yeah. You know, like anyone wants to see something on TV, you know, that looks like them and reflects them and, you know, resembles them. I think that's important because then when you see those wins, you feel like you're a part of those wins.
And it's possible for you to.
And it's possible, and it's possible to do that. And I think that's the main thing about that, is just like that story just showing that anything is possible, you know.
Legit.
And I feel like that's always been a goal and a desire of mine as well, is just to try and show that without needing like major labels, without needing that kind of thing,
that's
just
the
to
thing
show
as well.
That we can still do this and you can still get out and you can make this happen, you can make this a career, you know, as long as you have the determination and will, you know.
And so you're not signed to are you independent are
I'm
you?
An independent artist, so
I love that
so
you.
We have I do have different distribution deals, worked with major distros and smaller independent labels, but so right now still independent, and still been running it like that way for a while.
I love that. I think, you know, that's the way to go in 2023. Like,
as long as you got it, like we have the team, shout out my managers, shout out, you know, we have publishers, we have team around us that we still work efficiently with, but for us, creation and distribution, we do it.
Yeah. So, okay, explain it to me, because I'm not a musical person at all. I don't have experience in the industry.
Yeah.
What is a distribution deal? What's it about?
Distribution deal, so, is basically like you're creating the music and creating all the art itself. And then the distributor's job is to get it now. Today, it used to be like, you know, you're getting CDs in stores for you, delivering your CDs or creating your CDs. Now,
like logistics of it.
Logistics.
Yeah,
now
okay.
It's just like, you know, they're servicing. There's certain deals where they help fund your music as well.
Okay.
So they might put into the back end and they're distributing, they're pitching to like, you know, to services and things like that. So yeah, distributors, that's sort of their role. They can be major, they can be indie, but everything these days is just curated to where the artist is, what they want to do, how they want to, you know, play. And these days as well, there's even distributions that you can just do online yourself. Like
this
now they
use
people pay subscriptions for.
Yeah, how familiar are you? I mean, I'm taking, you know, a huge Taylor Swift fan.
Taylor Swift?
Yeah.
Like, I think I respect what she's doing, but
I read up on her story, what had happened.
Yeah.
Her label was closing down.
Right.
She made 80% of their revenue. Because she's a huge artist.
She was making 80% of the revenue for the label. Yeah.
They were closing down and she was like, cool, can I buy the masters off you? They were like, no, you can earn it back one album at a time. So for every new album you make? She was like, absolutely not. And they're like, all right, then we'll sell it to someone else. And I'm like, how very dare you? Like,
they sold it to
Scooter Braun for $350 million. I'm like, it's disgusting. It's her it's her first six albums, right? Yeah. So what would you, and this is someone, mind you, her father was an investor in the label. They helped get the label started.
Dad?
Yep.
Oh, right.
And they effed her over like that. And for someone like her who's so big and still got effed over like this, how would you recommend that young artists trying to get into the business, how would you recommend they recommend, like, they protect their art and their, and themselves, really, and their revenue, most importantly?
First, I think at the end of the day, you need to try and do your research. Just, you know, do your research. I mean, you're not going to be a music guru overnight, but I think today there's really no excuse to not have a general idea and direction of how to protect yourself in the music business, because it's a business at the end of the day. So ultimately, like, let's say you're signing a contract. The fundamental of any contract that someone gives you, this doesn't have to be music, but just a contract that someone gives you, you know that that contract is always going to be in their favor because they gave it to you. It's for their benefit. So that's fine. Contracts is part of doing business, but it's then there's a negotiation period. And if you don't understand what's in there, hire someone who does, get them to go over it and read it. And then from there, they'll be able to work with you to say, okay, this is what will help in your benefit. Yeah. So, I mean, even like, look, the Taylor's example, like that's a crazy one that happens. It happens a lot, like for people early in their careers, they sign and they sell their masters, you know. But you need to understand that masters is about ownership of the music. And, you know, you're creating, you're making money, but it's about always at the end about owning your art. So always try to start off with that intention, I think, to own your art, own your business, be aware of your business, not just making the art and saying, here, can you deal with all this?
And that's what that mentality of, like, I'm the creative talent, you deal with something else. Yeah. Like, and that ego will get you effed over. Like,
it'll, I mean, like, it will last so long. Like, it's amazing to be creative, but it's just like, just as long, I think it's just super important for us to be aware of what's going on. And then also, like, to have team around you that you can delegate to and just be, that you trust and that they understand that you are part of your business too, and they conversate with you. And that's what I, you know, which is super important to me. Anyone I work with, you know, that I can trust, and we delegate between each other and we work that way.
In terms of your journey,
is
there anything that you like back, like, oh, I wish I was quicker to get on that, or I was smarter about something? I mean, it's been a while.
If I was quicker to get on?
Yeah.
Man, TikTok, eh?
Yeah.
I would have got, I don't know, I had people
say, did you think it was like, oh, it's some kid's app and I'm not going
to for a little bit. I'm like, I remember my managers, he told me quite early, he was just like, yo, you better check this thing out. And I'm going on there, I'm like, they're dancing on here.
It was just girls doing dancing.
But I mean, like, we've still managed to see some growth, and, you know, you get around, and just, it's just about catering to you. But that, I mean, that's one thing I would have definitely liked to do. And I think I would have, like, tried to, if anything, try to travel a bit more earlier on in my career as well. Because I spent a lot of time investing in here, which is important, like, I'm from here. But I would have liked to, I think, earlier in the career, dipping back and forth, which we do now, but having that insight and just seeing that work rate and work drive in other countries earlier on, I think would have been dope.
Did you see, like, a different, like, would you say there's a difference in working culture and the music industry in other countries?
Yeah, 100%. I think overseas, like, if you go to, like, you know, if you go to the UK, especially, like, if you go to London, if you go to the States, even, you know, even in Lagos and in, like, Nigeria right now, or even different parts of Europe, you see the work rate. People are, like, really, like, working as far as music is concerned, like, they're just pumping it out, you know, and just seeing how much they're doing and how frequently they're releasing and things like that. And, you know, I think in Australia, we have a bit of a, like, really
relaxed,
complacent, relaxed, you know, style of living, which is fine. Like, I mean, that's part of our culture, and the ecosystem here as well only allows us to put our music ever so much because of our population. But
true.
You know, but to see that intensity and that drive and that excitement and just, you know, and being open to all different opportunities, you know, that's the thing. Being open to opportunities, it's just that real hustle mentality.
Do you think that's because, like, life is generally harder there?
I think, just like so many more people.
Yeah.
And not as much opportunities, you know, so everyone's fighting for the same thing and everyone's pushing for the same thing. And obviously, there's differences in every socioeconomic environment, in anywhere you go.
Yeah.
But it's just, there's, it's just a culture of just hustle.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. So
So we've just completed the walk. How did you find it?
I enjoyed it, man. I appreciated being out with you guys, being out in nature. Mm-hmm. You know, taking a walk and talking. So yeah, thanks for having me.
You didn't even break a sweat. At the end, I was like, "Oh, so how was it?" It's like, "Yeah, I'm cool, man." And then my like limbs are trembling, and it wasn't even hilly.
It was nice. I think you guys gave me the beginner course. So I mean, I'm cool. I'm all right.
No, it was good.
No, that's nice. Is there anything that you have that's coming up that you'd like to plug?
Yeah, I mean, we got new music now coming out, which I'm super excited about. Sandcastles, keep an eye out for that.
Yeah.
It's not out already. You know, new singles, so just excited about dropping new music again. And EPs, albums maybe. We'll get to that. But yeah, so and we're back on tour. I would have just got back off tour.
Definitely.
Yeah, so I mean, we're just excited about what 2024 is looking like. So stay tuned,
That's what we like to hear.
Mm-hmm. Well, thanks again for gracing our podcast.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Our local hero.
Yes.
Our local hero. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for watching, guys.
Thanks, guys. Bye.